The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
Welcome back. Well, the WHO did warn us at the start of the pandemic that the virus would impact the lives and incomes of women more than men, and this looks like it is very much the case. There are some startling statistics about the numbers of women leaving work as a result of COVID. In the US, the ratio of women working has fallen to its lowest point since 1988. Annabel Williams is the author of Why Women Are Poorer Than Men. She has some other startling statistics in the book, like why the British government spends more on erectile dysfunction than on the Healthy Start programme, which provides vouchers for low-income families to buy milk, fruit and veg, and why will it take over 250 years for women to close the pay gap with men. I spoke to Annabel and I first asked her about the pandemic and how it has impacted women's lives.
What happens is, when family members become sick, it's women who have to step back from paid work to care for them. When schools closed, it tends to be mothers who take over the homeschooling. Often the male partner is the higher earner in many households, but also they're not as expected to be as involved in childcare. So men tend to prioritise their work a bit more. So some of the sectors, such as high street retailers, hotels, hair and beauty salons, these are the businesses that have been largely closed for much of the past year, and they have a predominantly female workforce. So when companies have collapsed, such as Arcadia Group, most of the jobs that were lost were female jobs.
When you look at all of these issues that the pandemic has brought to the fore, the reality is, in many cases, the set of reasons behind that have been around a long time. There are many legacy issues. And in the book, you have some very interesting facts about the historical context for all of this. And, you know, in many ways, I suppose the odds have been stacked against women for a long time. It's not that long ago since, for example, in England, the definition of a person to incapacitated to deal with income tax was any infant, married woman or lunatic idiot.
Some of the wording of these laws really was just absurd. And actually, it wasn't very long ago. For example, Irish women couldn't own their homes independently until 1976. My mother is Irish and she would have been in her 20s before that rule changed. There was just no concept of a woman being financially independent. And then in the UK, for example, up until 1980, lenders were legally allowed to refuse a woman loans or credit cards or a mortgage unless she had a male guarantor, such as her father, even if she earned more than him. What's happened is that women have been disenfranchised and infantilised when it comes to money, and the effects of that still linger today.
When it comes to today and things like housing, The differences that are there between men and women in relation to pay, which then feeds into their ability to raise a deposit to own a house. You have some very interesting figures about that.
I wrote this book because many people feel that men and women are equal and that the equality battle is over. But actually, when it comes to money and wealth, there is a hidden inequality between the genders. The gender pay gap means that women spend years longer trying to raise the money for a deposit to buy a first home. The average man will be offered a mortgage of £140,000 bigger than the average woman. Think how much more €140,000 could buy you in property. The difference is just astronomical. The other thing that really shocked me, if you look at this data on single men being able to buy their own home, the figure is more than double the rate of the women's. So 18% of properties, first-time buyer properties, were purchased by men by themselves. And it's so much harder for women by themselves.
It isn't just about pay gaps within an organisation, because you cite examples where you have jobs that tend to be done by men of a particular level of skill and jobs that tend to be done by women of a particular level of skill. And there are huge pay gaps. You cite one Australian study.
Yes, the Australian example was that they found that childcare workers were being paid around half the wage of people who worked with metal, who were predominantly male, even though they had the same level of qualifications. And it's like,
Culturally, the men who bash metal are valued twice as much as the women who shape children's lives. In New Zealand, their Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, has done a big review of how local governments pay their workers. And what they found is that when you examine the skills involved in a traditionally female job, such as social work, it actually has similar skills to a traditionally male job, such as police detective and family violence constables. What they said was all of these roles require alertness and focus, and they also require a high degree of emotional skills. This is kind of how we need to look at fair pay, basically. It's about paying people for jobs that are in requiring similar skills and are of equal value.
If you look at the business world, the corporate world, there is a sense that things are changing vis-a-vis women chief executives, women on boards, you know, in big business and big corporations. But again, you have some very interesting figures here. You say that there are more men called Steve running the UK's top 100 companies than there are women altogether.
That sounds like a typo, but it's not. One of the other statistics that really reflects the inequality that women face in business is the fact that just one penny in every pound of funding that's given to startup businesses goes to female-led businesses. There's been lots of research into why this is. Initially, it was thought that maybe women went into more kind of female businesses and maybe that turned investors off. But that's actually not the case. Even when you control for the type of business, when women go into the boardroom and pitch for funding, they're held to a different standard than men are. So the majority of the questions posed to male entrepreneurs are about the potential for their business, when for women, they are asked about the risk of their business and how they're managing that. It's like they go into the boardroom, they see women bosses, and they think that they are going to be more risky. That just isn't the case, according to the data. So in other parts of the world, they've really cottoned on to the fact that when businesses have diverse leadership, they tend to do a lot better. They tend to be more innovative, more profitable, and they score better on corporate social responsibility.
When it comes to perceptions about women, do you think the media has a responsibility here? Do you think that very much it feeds into creating those misperceptions?
Yes, I do think that the media has had a role to play in upholding stereotypes about men and women when it comes to money. There was a fascinating study done by a bank which looked at 300 articles that were about money and aimed at either men or women. And it found that the genders were split definitively into two groups. You've got the thrifty splurger female, scrimping and saving, but is also kind of prone to splurging on non-essentials and needs help to kind of rein herself back in from being a shopaholic. And then you've got the adept financier male, as the researchers called it. And that was that articles that were about money and aimed at men had a more uplifting message, portrayed money as something attainable, aspirational, and part of a masculine ideal. And that's really interesting because actually banks report that there is little difference in the way that men and women spend. This stereotype that females are frivolous shopaholics and that men don't do that at all is basically sexism.
Are there a lot of stereotypes at play here? For example, the perceptions from an early age that we have about sons versus daughters and what we want for sons or for daughters and the kind of things that we aspire to for them.
Yes, so what's interesting is that despite all the achievements that women have made and the fact that women are reaching for the upper echelons of all kinds of industries, children in particular still seem to be picking up on really old-fashioned stereotypes, particularly the belief that kind of being intellectually gifted is a male quality. Maybe they're getting it from their parents. There was a really interesting study done in the US where researchers looked at what parents Googled about their children. And they found that parents asked Google, "Is my son gifted?" 2.5 times more
than they asked, is my daughter gifted? Search terms related to intelligence were far more likely to be asked of sons rather than daughters. And at the same time, parents Googled, is my daughter overweight, 70% more often than they said that about their sons. And they were also asking the internet whether their daughters were ugly or beautiful. I mean, I think this is really fascinating because there have been lots of studies that sadly show school-age girls feel pressure to look good in the classroom, and it does seem to be hindering their learning. It can also be really interesting to look at other countries, and from that you understand that ideas about what men and women are meant to be doing with their time and what they should study are really culturally constructed. So in Europe, there's lots of talk about getting more girls to study science, technology, engineering and maths subjects, the STEM subjects. But if you look at other parts of the world, like parts of the Middle East and Asia, for example, there are far higher participation rates in these subjects among girls. There's no concept that, you know, medicine or engineering is just for boys.
Another issue that arises is this question of the pink tax and how people end up paying more, basically, for female children's toys, for female clothing, all of that.
That's right. It actually costs much more to live as a woman than it does as a man. And this is because of what's called the pink tax. There's a mantra in marketing, and it's pink it, shrink it, and raise the price. And that's basically what manufacturers do when they create a female version of a male product. Pink laxatives for women, which are comfort coated. Pink earplugs for women, so we can sleep pretty. I mean, all of this sounds really trivial, but it actually comes into effect with essential items such as dry cleaning. Why does it cost more to have a blouse dry cleaned than it does a man's shirt?
As you paint the picture in the book, it's quite grim in terms of the global picture, the situation that women find themselves in at a time when, you know, many of us feel that things are improving. It certainly paints a picture that there's a long way to go. What can be done about it?
I hear what you're saying, but I've tried not to paint too grim a picture because I really believe that economic inequality between the genders, it's a big problem, but it's also the simplest to fix. There are loads of things that can be done at a structural level. For example, when we look at government spending, there's a strange discrepancy where spending on roads, hospitals and schools are classed as essential infrastructure, but then childcare isn't classed the same way. We can also look at small things that happen in the workplace. For example, in some countries, employers have been banned from asking prospective employees about their previous salary. This is because when your new employer bases your salary on your previous salary, if there was any unfairness there, that discrimination risks being carried forward into the next job. The other area where women are in desperate need of help is with retirement saving for old age. So in Ireland, women retire with pension savings that are an average of 50% lower than men's. So the typical man reaches retirement with €125,000 saved, but the typical woman has €69,000. This has been tackled in other countries. So Bolivia is one of the world's poorest countries, but when a woman takes a year out of work to look after her children, the government tops up her pension with a year's worth of pension contributions.
Well, there you are. Happening in Bolivia. Annabel Williams, author of Why Women Are Poorer Than Men and What Can We Do About It. We'll put a longer version of that interview up on the website after the show because it's jam-packed with examples and studies and stats. Things like why the pay gap benefits women in construction in Eastern Europe and why Harvard held back on toilets for women and a lot more. Thank you very much to Annabel Williams.